Electrical fires can be deadly, and an ongoing investigation from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel shows that in Milwaukee, low-income black renters face the highest risk. That series is called Wires and Fires. It found that landlords didn't often face consequences when bad electrical wiring caused a fire, and there was a lack of oversight from state and local government. In a new separate piece, one of the authors of the Wires and Fires series joined with ProPublica reporter Ken Armstrong to tell the story of a landlord, a tenant, and a house fire that ended in tragedy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about the risk of electrical fires where you live? Do you feel like you know how to spot the warning signs? What do you want to see from local or state governments to help prevent these electrical fires and the deaths they can cause? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Raquel Rutledge is a Pulitzer Prize-winning public service investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her new piece is called The Landlord and the Tenant. A note to listeners, this next conversation involves some discussion of child abuse and harm to children. Raquel, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You've been following this Wires and Fires series for a while. What led you to want to zoom in on this one particular story very intensively?
Yeah, well, this is a story that I've been thinking about for many years. When this fire happened in 2013, I remember thinking, what led up to that? Like, everybody was so focused on the mother and what happened with her and what she did. I wondered what the backstory was on how she got to the point of doing what she did. And I also wondered how there was so little attention paid to what caused the fire itself. And it was written off as sort of an accident at the time. And to me, that whenever we hear things, you know, are accidents, I just question that. And I wonder, you know, is it an accident or is it something that was preventable and even predictable? And as we found out, you know, years later, we've investigated this on a much broader scale and found out that often these fires are preventable and predictable.
Right. And this is taking us back to the original story that you referenced. Three children died in this rental fire. I want to meet the landlord and the tenant you write about. First of all, Todd Brunner was the landlord of this rental unit in West Allis at the center of the story. Can you introduce us to him?
Yes, that's right. Todd Brunner bought his first rental property when he was 20 years old back in the 1970s. He and one of his high school buddies went in on him. Todd Brunner had been a football star at New Berlin Eisenhower, popular guy, into cars, and he was on the prom court and elected as a senior class officer. Everyone said he was just a nice person back then. And he got into the real estate business with one of his high school friends. And they just took off from there, started buying more and more properties. And as his properties grew, he was known around Milwaukee as the foreclosure king, because he would really seize on these properties that others had lost in foreclosure to banks, and to such a degree that he had a desk, you know, at the when the sheriff sales were going on. He would be over there all the time and buying up these properties for relatively cheap. Sometimes $25,000, $30,000, and then not always maintaining them well. So he's a person that also filed bankruptcy kind of early on. He filed bankruptcy in 1992 and then again in 2011. And at that point, he owned upwards of 200 properties across the Milwaukee area. And as he filed bankruptcy, he got into trouble because the bankruptcy courts started to realize that he was not upfront about his bankruptcy, about his property ownings. He was hiding some of his properties, and he owned a bunch of cars, including like a Rolls Royce and a Bentley. And he had Harley motorcycles and fast boats and all kinds of what he called cool toys. And he was trying to hide them from the bankruptcy court. So he got into trouble that way.
And in addition to the fraud investigation that led to, when you go through city records in Milwaukee and the surrounding area, his name frequently appeared, it seems like, for various kinds of violations in rental properties, including safety violations.
That's right. I mean, he racked up so many at one point that he had 11 warrants out for his arrest because he neglected to fix these things. And then he would incur fines and he wouldn't pay the fines and he wouldn't pay taxes. At one point, he owed back taxes for 29 municipalities around the area. in upwards of $100,000 in fines that he didn't pay, in taxes that he didn't pay. And yeah, we just found when you went through his properties, there were a number of, and he had a number of fires at his places, and people complaining about shooting sparks out of their electrical outlets. So he was well known to code enforcement officials in Milwaukee and in some of the surrounding suburbs as well.
Talking to Raquel Rutledge from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her new piece is called The Landlord and the Tenant. Let's meet the tenant who was at the center of the headlines. You referred to Raquel, Angelica Belen.
Yes, Angelica Belen was first actually in the news back in the 1990s when she was a small girl. She was 3 years old, and her little sister was found beaten and starved in her crib on the south side of Milwaukee. And her mother and her mother's boyfriend were arrested and convicted for the homicide of that little girl. And so Angelica became a ward of the state and moved through the foster care system. She and one of her other little sisters, her mother had at that time had seven children. And so Angelica and her little sister, Rosalie, stayed together and were put in foster homes. And they moved throughout. And in a number of the foster homes, they were subjected to severe abuse. You know, the records and interviews with Angelica and her sister have substantiated some of the horrendous things that they suffered throughout their childhood.
At the time of the fire, then, at a house that had been previously owned by Todd Brunner, I think it was in foreclosure. Can you talk about Angelica's life at that point?
Yeah, so Angelica then, as she got older, she was in relationships with abusive men. She ended up having a daughter, and then she had twin boys, and then she had another child after that. And three of those children had special needs. And Angelica was 24 when she rented the place from Todd Brunner, not knowing any of the history about him or the place. She had been struggling, living in her car and living in a shelter and just struggling to take care of these kids that had special needs. One of them had epilepsy and autism, and one had cerebral palsy. So they just had high needs, and she was really struggling to take care of them. And so she had left them alone a number of times and had been warned not to leave them alone, to which she said, when she was a child, she was left alone regularly in her foster homes, and no harm had come of it. So she was sort of brought up that way. And when she rented the house from Todd Brunner, she didn't know the background, but we interviewed the previous tenant of that home, who told us that the electrical system in that home had been a mess and that she had complained about it as well. The lights would flicker on and off all the time. The light bulbs would burn out. I mean, she said, she thought there were ghosts living in there because the electrical system was so terrible, that as she went back one day to pick up her mail after she had moved out, and she ran into Angelica there at the house and was surprised. She asked her, had they fixed anything? And she said, hey, they should not have let you move into this place because it's a danger. And Angelica Belen was definitely struggling. The social services had been involved with her in weeks prior to the fire and trying to really help her figure out ways to get her children to their appointments, get their medications filled, and get some care set up for them while she worked. She had just recently gotten a job as a hostess at a Chinese restaurant and was headed to work the day of the fire.
We're talking to Raquel Rutledge, public service investigative reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at her recent investigation with ProPublica called The Landlord and the Tenant, and her ongoing series about electrical fires in rental properties. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about a new investigation from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and ProPublica called The Landlord and the Tenant. Raquel Rutledge from the Journal Sentinel stays with us to look at electrical fires and faulty wiring in rental properties. We've met the landlord and the tenant now. Raquel, take us to April 11th, 2013. Angelica makes a decision to leave her kids at home while she goes to that job you mentioned, and the electrical system finally goes wrong.
Well, that's right. Yes. So Angelica, got up in the morning, did what she does in the morning, got the kids ready for her oldest daughter ready for school. She drove her across town to a Lutheran school, and the boys, she would, you know, often take the boys and her youngest with her. Her youngest son at the time, a 17-month-old, was with his dad that day. So she was with her twin boys and her daughter. And she, after she picked up her daughter from school, she had a shift at, you know, at the Chinese restaurant where she worked, which was about 6 miles away. And she was scheduled to work from 4 till 7. And she had been struggling. This is only her third shift at that job. And the prior shift that she had a few days earlier, she got some neighbors to watch the kids, because a neighbor she didn't really know very well. But she was scheduled to have subsidized daycare set up the following day. She was scheduled to go to the county to get that all set up. But so this day she did not have that. And so she called one of her sisters. She called around a neighbor. She tried to see if she could get anybody to help with the children, and she could not. And she felt like she needed to be at work or she would lose that job. So that was her thinking when she put the kids up in the boys' bedroom. She hugged them. She kissed them. She said, "I will be back, you know, in a few hours. Play with your toys. I'll bring you a cookie when I come home, and we will have spaghetti for dinner." And she left them in that room. She closed the door behind her and she locked it, and she went to work. And about an hour later, a neighbor went out to let his dog out to go to the bathroom, and he noticed smoke coming from the roof of that house, and he called 911. And fire officials arrived on the scene. Neighbors gathered around the porch and didn't think anybody was home because I had seen her car leave. And so they said the house is empty. The firefighters go through and do what they do, you know, kind of sweeping from the ground floor up. When they came to the boys' bedroom and found it locked, they broke it down, but the smoke was so thick they couldn't see in there. And what they could see was a hole in the floor. And so they were called off because they realized the floor was unstable. They couldn't go any further at that point. And so they retreated. And at about 7 p.m., Angelica clocked out of work a few minutes after 7, and she drove home. And when she got close to her neighborhood, she could see all the fire lights, fire engines, and everything. And she was blocked from getting closer to that by the police had blocked off the area. And she started asking about, "Hey, what's going on?" And they said, "There's a fire." And they asked, you know, she asked questions about which house. And as they started to describe it, she started to realize it sounded like it was her house. And she just got out of the car and started running and just ran past everybody and up into the yard and asked about her children. And the firefighter said there wasn't anybody in there. And she said, I "Are you sure? Are you sure? I think my kids are in there." And so they went back in at that point and climbed up into the boys' room through a ladder from the outside and found the three children under a dresser huddled together. They were all killed. And so they arrested her fairly quickly, and she was taken to jail and interrogated. And initially she said she left her kids with her sister, and that she didn't lock the door. And ultimately, after several hours of interrogation, you know, she acknowledged what happened, and she was charged with child neglect that resulted in death in the case of, you know, all three children. And ultimately she was sentenced to 18 years in prison. So she is now 9 years into her sentence. And, you know, has nine years remaining.
She faced, as you say, 9 years remaining. What ultimately caused the fire when they went in and looked to try to determine the cause?
Yeah, so they did an investigation and they found that it did start behind the wall in the kitchen. And it was a light bulb that she had complained about. She knew it wasn't working. She just said she never used that light because every time she put a light bulb in it, it would burn. It was burn out. And so they confirmed that it was indeed electrical. And when the investigators went in to look at it, they said they had never seen such crazy wiring in their experience, in their history of looking at this stuff. We saw pictures that they shared of the police department in the police file. There were spliced wires that were plugged directly into an outlet. It was a fire trap waiting, you know, just a fire waiting to happen with that kind of wiring that was in that house.
As you mentioned, Angelica Bullen faced consequences, still in prison now. Were there any consequences for the neglect of the electrical system in the house that ultimately caused the fire?
There were not. There were not. Officials pursued charges against Todd Brunner. He was convicted of 3 felonies for bank fraud and bankruptcy fraud, but no charges were ever filed. The judge in the case said he would have thought the prosecutors would have brought something along that line. The prosecutor said the police never presented them with any evidence along that line of thinking. And then when we interviewed the police detectives, they just said, hey, we never went that direction. You know, all the focus was on the mom and the fact that she left those kids alone.
Talking to Raquel Rutledge, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and her story, The Landlord and the Tenant. Broadening out now to the wider issues of the faulty wiring in rental properties, is it common for landlords to face consequences if it's found that the wiring in their houses was a problem, it caused fires, and had gone unaddressed in the past?
It is not common. It is not common at all. And though all the attorneys that I've spoken with, and like I said, the judge and the prosecutor say it is possible. That is a line of pursuit that is, it is possible. There's a 3-year statute. Well, not when deaths happen, but there's for wrongful death suits, there's a 3-year statute of limitations on the state side of things for civil liability. Angelica Bullen did try to sue Todd Brunner in federal court in 2020. But that was dismissed due to just jurisdictional issues on that front. It is rare, but it's not impossible.
Is there recourse for a tenant living in a situation where they say, hey, I'm seeing obvious electrical problems and my landlord isn't addressing it?
You know, it's a great question. There's a lot of fear among tenants and, rightfully so. We found that they fear repercussions from the landlord. They fear of being evicted. Angelica Bullen had been evicted previously. And so she was worried if she complained that she would be kicked out and become homeless again. And so a lot of times, there aren't complaints. And so, the recourse right now for folks is to talk to, the Common Council in Milwaukee, talk to local legislators, talk to the state. The state legislators really gutted some of the tenant protections back in 2015, really tying the hands in some ways of local municipalities, making it more difficult and making it somewhat cost prohibitive for them to do rental inspections that are proactive, like getting in there on a routine basis so they can have eyes on and flag some of these hazardous conditions, which we found are extensive in Milwaukee. There are a lot of people living. These conditions still exist in many, many rental properties in the area. And so it's going to take an effort by local and state government to really address this issue.
Can you remind us of some things a renter might see around their apartment or rental house that could be a problem?
Sure. There were some things that I was sort of surprised at when I started investigating this too. One of the things is like a loose outlet. When you plug a cord into an outlet and it falls out, that is a dangerous hazard that can create arcing and sparking and can catch curtains on fire or a couch on fire, a nearby couch, flickering lights. When you see that, that's a symptom. Wires that, if you have outlets that don't work, what we found in a lot of the rental properties is as people would use extensive use of extension cords. And they often, they're often blamed for doing that. Hey, don't use extension cords. But when you have one outlet that might work in your room, or sometimes no outlets that work and you're forced to use extension cords from other rooms, those things are known to be very dangerous and cause a lot of the electrical fires as well.
This particular story we've been talking about is in West Allis. A lot of your reporting had been in Milwaukee itself, and there's been some reaction you've reported on this two-year series from city officials and others in Milwaukee. Has there been any kind of action there to try to tackle this problem?
Well, some state lawmakers did introduce a bill last session. They're talking about reintroducing this session coming up. Didn't go anywhere. It's right now. It's just they've got Democrats and they're needing some Republican colleagues to sign on with it. And locally, there is definitely, I'm following up with some of the local lawmakers. They too have talked about mandating insurance Some of the things we found in our early reporting was that the properties weren't insured. And when they're not insured, they don't always get a full investigation, because oftentimes the ones that do these investigations are insurance companies, because they want to get to the bottom of what caused the fire. But if there is no insurance, sometimes it's just written off as an accident. That was not the case in the case of the fire for Todd Brunner's home. But that is common in Milwaukee when people are buying properties for $10,000 or $15,000. They don't always have them insured. So there's talk about mandating insurance for rental property owners and figuring out ways to resurrect inspection programs.
And you've been following this for some time, Raquel. What are you watching for next?
That is what I'm watching for next, is to see how local and state lawmakers respond to these types of situations, because so often it's happened year after year where people are being killed in these fires and they're continuing to be written off as being accidental. And what we have proven is that they are not. They are, fire experts say, these types of fires are very preventable and predictable.
Raquel, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for your interest in the story.
That's Raquel Rutledge, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel, with us today to talk about her latest investigation with ProPublica. It's called The Landlord and the Tenant. You can find a link to it at wpr.org/centraltime.